ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls. This is Paul Nichols, the investor coach and your host of It's Your Money, the podcast that was designed to pull back the curtain on the financial services industry and expose the truth about money and investing. Happy New Year. I hope this finds you well. This is my first recording for 2016. I'm going to talk about a couple items that I believe are timely, a couple observations, and kind of a review of what's happened in 2015. 2015 was somewhat volatile, not nearly as volatile as the first month of 2016. But I wanted to talk about how you actually manage volatility a little bit today, and how you take advantage of the fact that the market does go up and down. I have a friend that always says, investors love volatility when it's up. So they only want upward volatility. Of course, when it's down, that's when the money demons start to creep in and a little bit of stress may ensue. And you start to go, oh, what am I doing in the market? What am I doing here? I should take my money out and stick it in the mattress. This is a normal human response. It's brought on predominantly by a lack of clarity or understanding how one's investments are invested, assuming they are invested prudently, academically, structured, assuming those things, then there's really not much to worry about in the area of money demons. And money demons are generated, in Paul's opinion, based on my observations, of predominantly the mainstream media, the news, all the different sources and outlets. There has to be a pain or pleasure motivation. That's what sells the news. As I was talking to you, Gene Fama, years ago at a conference, one of the things he said to a group of us, and I found this to be very interesting, Eugene Fama and Kenneth French came up with the three-factor model, well accepted today in the academic community and has been pursued in the financial arena. A part of the science that's been built over the last 50 years in different academic institutions, and these guys are big-time academics, but he talks about the news being noise. So the news, at the end of the year, the market is a zero-sum game. In order for someone else to win, someone has to lose. Because at the end of the year, we're all in the same market. We're all in the same overall market. The market, for those of you that are just starting to learn about this stuff, is comprised of all the companies globally that are producing in some way, shape, or form. It's to create, the market is, in fact, the creative energy of all of what we do in every given day. It's the inspiration. It's the motivation. It's the vision. It's the productivity, innovation. All the different things that create products and so on that people buy, and money moves, and from that comes profit, so on and so forth. So when we hear news, a lot of times people perceptionally will accept the news thinking that that has some bearing on how they should invest. And there's no social, political, economic climate that would ever cause those of us that are structured prudently within an academic framework for investing that we would change anything. In fact, the way that we look at investing is relatively simple. You want to own equities. You want to diversify. Equities would be ownership in stocks around the world. You want to own countries in every country around the world, roughly 45 emerging and developed markets. You want to rebalance on a regular basis and realize that investing is a lifelong endeavor. I often hear people say to me, "Well, Paul, look, I need to start getting real conservative here. I'm going to retire next year." And the question always comes to mind is, "Well, how long does your money need to last? Till you retire or till you check out?" Well, your money may need to last 20, 30, 40, in some cases, 50 years for a spouse or so, after someone might pass away, not pass away, but after they retire, I'm sorry. So when we realize, I'm saying all this to kind of, I believe, capsulize what's happened last year in the market and what's happening this year, and that is the perception of economies and where we are. people often forget, you know, you hear all the doom and gloom, and right now you have a lot of the negative advertisements and advertisements coming out talking about the doom and gloom of the market and so on in order to sell some type of product. And what's interesting, fixed product, an annuity insurance, or a CD, or a real estate investment trust, or whatever. And the reality is, all products in certain way, shapes, or form could be used in a well-devised plan. But they're just, you know, not something one would just hold just to have it. But what people often don't understand, not being real adverse in the financial arena, is that all financial investments are interconnected in some way, shape, or form based on the overall productivity growth of the economy as a whole. So people say to me, well, I'm concerned about the doom and gloom. I'm concerned about the value of the dollar. I'm concerned about, a Muslim terrorist. I'm concerned about our government direction in the spending. I'm concerned about the debt. I'm concerned about this and that. I think I should buy a bunch of gold and, you know, get some doom and gloom, you know, buy some water filters and some dehydrated food and get ready for the inevitability, which is the dollar's going to implode and we're all going to go to hell in a handbasket. Well, when I hear these things, you know, of course, like any emotional being, there's some shred of potential logic that one could wrap around that type of thinking. But when you dig a little deeper and look at just the core innate human experience, at what point are we not going to want to eat? At what point are we not going to want some form of comfort, hopefully more creature comfort than sitting by a campfire living in a cave? The reality is that all of us want that. We all inspire. We all want the path of least resistance. We all want that. So at what point are we all going to quit producing in order to eat? And at what point are people that understand the bigger picture of how businesses work and harnessing the productivity of other people would not take advantage of it? So when we think about the worst-case scenario, the doom and gloom, it's highly unlikely. It certainly does not create any self-preservation. That is, we all have self-preservation in mind, taking care of oneself. So I take that right off the board. Well, then, Paul, why is the market like it is? And I'll tell you very clearly, it's perception and nothing more. In my experience, as I've really gotten a grasp on the science of how investing works in the last decade, certainly, I realize that a lot of news has happened in the last decade, and it has had no bearing on a sound investment strategy. That, in fact, what we find, all the movements in the market are not individual investors as much as it is mutual fund managers trying to find some place to get some growth in the fund they represent, which their bonus is tied to. So what we have is a lot of people chasing returns. Unfortunately, that's what makes the news, the larger trades, the institutional trades, these types of things. You know, you think about how much trading happens every day, there's no way to substantiate it. How can so many smart people be so wrong so much that they have to trade so much? And they're just chasing the news. So there's really no rationale. And let me illustrate that. I'm going to look at three quarters of 2015. So I'm going to look at March 31st, that day, June 30th that day, and December 31st that day. So we have 3 days, the end of the second, third, and fourth quarter. Now, I'm going to look at just four different asset classes, or five, and give you an idea of the importance of sticking to an academic approach, to a structured mindset, and sticking to the academic truths and tenets, if you will, of investing. In one of those, own equities, diversify, rebalance. Now is when you really need to understand the concept of rebalancing more than ever before. But it's not rebalancing to move to some other fund or move to some other product that's defensive in nature as it relates to the social, political, economic climate in the news today. Because that news has bupkis to do with the reality of what's going to happen in your investing situation, certainly long term. And for those of us that understand that the news is predominantly a perception driver and it leads people to do imprudent things, for those of us that understand that, we can capitalize on the imprudence. We can capitalize on the fact that people are hyper-diapers and freaking out. And let me give you an example of that. Let's look at the S&P 500 index. That is U.S. large companies, predominantly 500. It's meant to give people an idea of how our overall economy is doing, because they figure 500 large companies is indicative demonstrates how we're doing. Well, let's look at the end of quarter two. The S&P 500 index was up 1.23%. That index is that 500 companies and how they're doing in that given day or climate. So 1.23% up. You know, nothing to write home over, but it's positive, yay team. Well, let's go to 6:30. Now we're talking 3 months later, June 30th, the S&P index dropped to negative 5.29. Well, then let's go to quarter four, 12/31, December 31st, and the S&P went back up to about 1.38. Now, let me use this as an example of how an academic structure and prudent structured investing doesn't need to anticipate the news or what's going to happen, but can get the market returns that are there. Whatever area is up, you're going to own it in a prudent portfolio. So one would own S&P 500 or U.S. large, let's make it that way, U.S. large in their portfolio. Well, if I had U.S. large in my portfolio and it went up 1.23%, well, when I rebalance at the end of that quarter, I'm going to take that profit. We're going to sell some of that off because it's at a high, and we're going to take that money and slide it over into the cash area. We're locking in the gain. This is how you manage volatility. You take gains when they happen on a structured basis, and you have to give a little cash back when they're down. Let's go to quarter three as an example, where we went down negative 5.29. Well, at that point, when everyone else is selling, the prudent thing to do that day is to buy. So you would buy more of that. You're not buying a new fund or going after a new strategy or chasing the news. You're selling what's up of what you own and buying more of what you own when it's down. So then we locked in 1.23% quarter two. We gave a little bit of cash, took it off the table, and had to buy some large up because it went down. But then it turned around and went up the next quarter. So you're always selling high and always buying low. But you're never chasing any news. You're never chasing anything other than looking at a rigid investment approach that looks at this academically and endeavors to take all the human component out of it. Now, let me segue for a moment right there. You're starting to hear a term robo-advisor a lot more often. There's this perception that, okay, well, Paul, based on the science, I can put that on autopilot through these different firms, build a portfolio, and it'll automatically just stay that way. Well, the challenge with that and what I find is it's still very actively managed. The robo-advisor platform is actively managed predominantly, and so what you still have is managers chasing the news. But what I'm really noticing, and this is something I've watched for about 2 years now, I'm seeing it everywhere now with every major firm today, and I'm going to be writing some blogs about this in the future, and it's the grand misdirect. Because firms for years have been so actively managed and they haven't got a market rate of return, they cannot really tout performance. You know, for many years, decades, we would see performance touted and stars to go with the performance, and that's how fund companies would sell their funds, whether they sell them to advisors that pursue them or whatever, and most of them are commissioned. They're not in an investment advisor fee-only structure. Some are, but most aren't. What they're doing now is not focusing on performance anymore. They're focusing on fees. And what they're doing is giving people the illusion that the fees are super low, and as a result, their returns would be better. But the reality is, they're totally taking people away from focusing on getting a market return and performance, and rather focusing on a fee. It is an absolute, calculated, billions of dollars are spent on it every year, misdirect, in order to lead the investor, the average investor, away from the reality of what they're earning, and thinking that they're getting a super low fee structure, when in reality what they see is super low fee potentially, but the nature of the activity inside creates fees along the way, which drives down the overall return. So active management rarely Well, let me say this. Active management never consistently beats the market, and that's the reason, because it has that human emotion, and sometimes people interpret the news wrong. Back to rebalancing. So, to make a point, let me move on to international, because I think this really makes a great point. Here we had emerging markets, international, developed markets small. So we had basically 22 countries that represent the developed international areas. And the second quarter, or quarter two, March 31st of last year, it was 10% up, which is incredible, okay? But then it went to the next quarter, June 30th, to negative 0.04, so just a hair down. And then it went back up to 4% December 31st. That was one of the shining areas last year, okay? And although overall, although small and some other areas were up, overall, the areas that were down dragged down the areas that were up, but you still got profit from the areas that were up. It just wasn't enough to offset those that are down. But the intent, and let me close it with this, the intent of rebalancing and managing your volatility is by what you're trying to do. The intent is to manage the volatility and get a market return. The intent is to help manage your emotions along the way so that you don't see these big spikes up or down. The way to do that is to rebalance religiously. Unfortunately, what this often does is it lends itself to a conversation with an advisor and an investor that is a story economically, social, political, economically driven to move them to another type of fund rather than sticking to a very stringent investment paralysis to start with, or investment strategy, and getting the returns that are there. So what all that means basically, ladies and gentlemen, is that when you look at investing overall, you cannot beat the market and get a market return actively because of the cost of actively chasing the news. Science makes it very clear that the smartest thing to do is head to a more passive area. That would be, you know, owning all the areas of the market and rebalancing and getting what returns are there. Well, unfortunately, the active nature of investing and trading has actually created activity beyond a passive nature in the index arena. So there's really three ways to invest. There's the active, passive, and structured. Active is the vast majority of the industry. That's what people think, that there's smart people that have insight that they don't. They can show them where to get returns. I don't know why they would share that if they knew it. Number two would be passively. This is where more academics and more of the science has pointed the last 25 years, certainly, and said 35, 40 years, really, and said, look, we need to get market returns, not chase the market. But the nature of the speculation and the active going chasing market returns has created almost an active scenario in the passive arena. So that forces the academics to even make it tighter and move down to more of a structured type of investment platform, which is what I'm explaining to you here. Now, if you understand this, ladies and gentlemen, then you should not be spooked by the volatility. In fact, you should be scrounging up as much money as you can now and putting more in the market. Ladies and gentlemen, when the market rebounds, it is incredible. It's absolutely, give me an example, and I'm going to end with this. 1929, 1930, some of you remember this from history class, the big market crash, spurred on the Great Depression. By the way, it didn't need to spur on the Great Depression, but that's a whole conversation to itself if you get into the economic realities of what happened. But what a lot of people don't realize is that year, 1929, that next 12 months after October 29th when the market crashed, the market went down by 82% that year. That was the worst market crash in history because of the percentage that it went down. But what people don't realize is the 12 months following that year, the market went up over 200%, and the average for the 5 years following the 1929 stock market crash was 40% annually. Ladies and gentlemen, you can look at it in every single time in history when the market's gone down, it has come back ferociously. And it's this money demons that you're going to have to manage. So really, the point of this whole conversation with you today is to really say you need to hone in on the money demons, recognize what they are, which is that fear and flight, and realize there is There are structured ways to manage our emotions, not manage them so much as hang a logical hook somewhere where the emotion doesn't have to be prevalent. See, we're emotional about what we don't understand. We're emotional about what we can't wrap our heads around. And we're emotional, certainly, in a fear area about things that are beyond our knowledge base. So, you know, you don't need to be fearful. You don't need to be a hyper diaper. You need to just realize that investing is relatively simple. Own equities, rebalance, and diversify and rebalance. Now, if you're not investing that way, or you're not sure you're investing that way, then you need to get educated. There's a number of books you can read. There's sources you can go to. You can go to our website, faicoach.com, to get started. You can call our office. There's a whole array of actual material out there. The challenge is most of the industry doesn't want you to know the investment realities because then you would not be as lucrative as a profit center for them if you do. So with that being said, this is Paul Nichols, the Investor Coach. I hope this finds you well. Just giving you a few nuggets. Listen to it a few times if you need to. And if you're ever wondering or need some clarity, all you got to do is call our office, Financial Abundance, 814-867-5745. We're located in State College, Pennsylvania. Yes, that's Happy Valley, where Penn State is. We're a registered investment advisory firm, and we would love to hear from you if you want to get coached up. We're all about peace of mind. We believe education leads to clarity. Clarity leads to confidence. And only with confidence can one ever aspire to achieve peace of mind, and you can do it. You can definitely do it here. You can definitely do it with your finances, and I hope that you endeavor to do it. Have a great day, and I hope you have an awesome, prosperous new year. We'll talk to you next time.